You are Locked On Phillies, your daily Philadelphia Phillies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
But we will start here in 3, 2, 1. Thanks for making Locked On Phillies your first listen every single day. We are free and available on all platforms. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. I, of course, am your host, Dan Wilson, and joining us today, friend of the podcast, and of course, the former host of the Locked On Phillies podcast. You know his work from PhilliesNation.com. It is our old pal, Tim Kelly. Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Dan. How about you?
I'm doing great. We have a lot to get to here today. I haven't spoken to you since the Phillies season ended. We'll, of course, get into all of that. Have not spoken to you. Well, wouldn't really. I didn't obviously have you on at all during the postseason either. So we'll get you kind of what your thoughts and how the season ended, how the Braves won the World Series, anything, any takeaways you had from the playoffs. I know I've spoken to your counterpart, Johnny Heller, about what the Braves did at the trade deadline, what the Phillies did not do. I'm sure we'll get into that. We'll talk all things off season, what this off season looks like for the Phillies, as well as this lockout that is looming, and what's the countdown out here? 12 days, 11 days, something like that, that looks like we're going to be headed into. So Locked On Phillies could very soon become Locked Out Phillies, but that's December's problem, right? We're sitting here, it's November 19th here and now. And the news of the day, the hot news of the day, is less than 24 hours ago, just last night, Bryce Harper, the National League MVP for the year 2021, the first MVP the Phillies have had since 2007 when Jimmy Rollins won it. He went back to back with Ryan Howard in 2006. Also didn't realize, I know it had happened, but the first MVP in baseball, if I'm not mistaken, to not make the All-Star team since 2007 when Jimmy Rollins did it. Justin Morneau did it the year before that. And there's been kind of a random scattering of others, but literally the last two Phillies MVPs were not All-Stars in the seasons they won the most valuable player, which speaks to the second half they had. Of course, the 2007 Phillies made the playoffs. The 2021 Phillies did not. The 2006 Phillies were just on the cusp of making the playoffs when Howard won it. So maybe this is a sign of better things to come. But just your overall thoughts on Bryce winning the MVP and the overall awards in general. Any surprises from your standpoint?
Yeah, I was talking to another writer in, like, I want to say May or June, and he said to me, Bryce Harper's been really solid, but I thought he would be the type of guy that could come in here and carry a team for a few months like Ryan Howard used to, and he hasn't been that to this point. And at that stage, I agreed, and little did we know he was about to do that for a few months. Unfortunately for the Phillies, from a team perspective, that was not enough because the rest of the lineup didn't hit, especially once Rhys Hoskins was out. But Bryce Harper, I mean, it's not maybe as memorable a season as Ryan Howard hitting 58 home runs, but it's just, it's another great season. I just looked, this was his 10th season, 9 full seasons. He's averaged 34 home runs, 95 RBIs, and 916 OPS. He's had 6 All-Star games, 2 MVPs. My take is that if there was any question, and I don't think this is too soon to have this discussion, if there was any question that Bryce Harper is trending towards the Hall of Fame, that's kind of been answered this season.
Yeah, I mean, he solidified himself as now having another MVP season. For the longest time, it seemed like the argument against Bryce Harper was, well, we know what he's capable of. We know that in 2015, he had an absolutely ridiculous season. We know that that is his ceiling, but he really hasn't matched that since. And here he goes again in the year 2021. I mean, you could argue that 2015 was even better than his 2021. I believe he was. I mean, he obviously was an All-Star that season.
It was probably
the greatest season of his career.
And who knows? I thought about when he spoke last night, asking him, you know, which season do you think is better? And then I'm like, well, I know the answer to this, and they'll probably get mad at me for asking the question. So I just kind of set that one aside. But 2015 was like one of the greatest offensive seasons in the last 25 years.
And it was more consistent, and it was all the way through. And obviously he was an All-Star in that season. And this one was second half. And you could argue there are years where he would not have won the MVP if there was someone who had a similar season and that team made the playoffs, which brings me to my next question that we were kind of discussing a little bit beforehand of, how much should a team's overall success impact the MVP just as a general rule? Because, I mean, none of the guys he's going up against made, like, none of the top tier MVP candidates were in the playoffs either. Obviously, Fernando Tatis and Juan Soto, the other two finalists, neither of their teams made the postseason. I mean, should that matter when we're talking about MLB awards, whether it's the MVP, whether it's the Cy Young?
I don't think it should, because I don't think it should be controversial to say you can provide the most value of any specific player in the league and still have a terrible team around you. It's a team sport. I do think they got it right with Bryce Harper, but it was razor thin with Juan Soto. And if someone had said Juan Soto, I wouldn't have had a problem with that. Why should I blame Juan Soto for the fact that Trey Turner got traded, Max Scherzer got traded, Kyle Schwarber got traded, the team wasn't very good to begin with, and they tore down in the middle of the season? If anything, that makes what he did more impressive. But I know there's a lot of people that don't think that. This sounds like a fake story, but it's real. I was walking down Market Street yesterday, and I passed Howard Eskin. And I was talking about it with him, and he was telling me he thought Austin Riley should have won the MVP. So, I mean, it definitely shows you that there's a lot of different perspectives out there about how much team success should matter. But, I mean, ultimately, you compare what Bryce Harper did to Austin Riley. Austin Riley had the same Fangraphs war, and I know people don't all love war, but he had the same Fangraphs war over the entire season that Ronald Acuna had over, like, the whatever, he got hurt July at some point. I mean, that's not an MVP. It's a nice season. He had a very good season, but Bryce Harper had a better season. Juan Soto, Trey Turner, go down the list. They all had better seasons. And, you know, team success to me should not be what decides individual awards ultimately. And fortunately, I don't think it did in this case.
Really quick before we have to hit our first break here, I guess I'll ask this in a general sense, and we'll certainly talk more Bryce MVP and the awards in general, but we've had this discussion a lot, not just me and you, but the entire city of Philadelphia, Major League Baseball and its fans and analysts and writers, quite frankly, of when you sign a guy to a 13-year, $330 million, just a few more million dollar contract, is it possible for that contract to be quote unquote worth it? What is the value that needs to be met? Up until this point, a lot of people would have said, well, you know, Bryce Harper has been good, but he hasn't been MVP level. Well, now he's won an MVP, not in a 60 game season, in a 162 game season for the Phillies. The team still has failed in a variety of other areas to get over the hump and make the playoffs around that, or try and put an adequate team around Bryce Harper. But as you see it, when he first signed the contract, or even now, we're now 3 years into this thing, what is the value that at least Bryce needs to give to hold up his end of the contract? And does winning the MVP, I mean, has he checked off that box yet in your mind?
Well, I don't know that he's checked off the box, but it certainly goes a long way in doing it. Like, I look back at Albert Pujols' contract with the Angels, and what stands out to me is that not only did he never win an MVP, but he was never even close. So Bryce Harper is now at a season where he's won an MVP. I would imagine he'll have a few more where, at the very least, he's like in the top five, top seven. I don't know. I mean, it's a 13-year deal. I certainly wouldn't have structured that way. I would have just paid more over 10 if that was possible. That's not how the Phillies did it. And I have a tough time thinking someone that's 19 or that came into the sport when they're 19 and has had some minor back injuries, that the back half of that deal is going to be pretty. And 6 years, like, let's say he has seven excellent years and then kind of hits a wall. 6 years is a long time. Like, we saw that with Ryan Howard's contract, how long that is, that by the end, Ryan Howard had almost as many bad years with the Phillies as he had good years. And I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Bryce Harper's contract, but 13 years is a lot. I wouldn't do a victory lap on the deal just yet. But to this point, he's held up his own end. The problem is, you gave this deal thinking that during that 6 or 7 years, whatever that you have of him still at his peak level, you were going to compete for a championship. And you've already wasted 3 of those years where you weren't even close. And I'm not sure that there's something on the horizon to make you think that over the remaining years of his peak, you're going to get there.
I have more thoughts on this on the other side in terms of what makes it worth it and, you know, what he has to do within that contract, front end, back end of the contract in terms of length and money as well. But first, I have to tell you about BetOnline. BetOnline.ag. We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of basketball season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website and sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. And also, I have to thank all of you for making Locked On Phillies your first listen every single day. We are free and available on all platforms. When I think about contract value, Tim, and again, we're sitting here with Tim Kelly, of course, from PhilliesNation.com and former host of this Locked On Phillies podcast. When I think about value of a contract, there has to be a few things that go into it when you hand out a deal like that. A, is the player good enough and worth it? B, is length versus money and what the market indicates it's going to, you know, take to get a guy like that. And then three, or C, or whatever you want to call it, the third thing is that you have to be in a position where it makes sense for your team. And so I think the biggest question mark for me is, we kind of will pivot here in just a minute for where the team is as a whole. Bryce Harper is, you know, and clearly an MVP caliber player still, even in the year 2021. He had good seasons in 2019 and 2020, and the voted the best player in the National League in the year 2021. And yet the team, unless your barometer for success, which I don't think anyone would say this, is just getting the first winning season in the franchise's last 10 years, the team hasn't actually improved as a result of that. And when I think about signing a 13-year contract for a guy like that, I say, all right, he wanted the length, he wanted to, you know, quote unquote, finish his career in one place. He will be known as a Philly, and you mentioned the Hall of Fame earlier. And if he does indeed go into the Hall of Fame, which it seems like he could very well be on that track, it seems like it'll likely be going in as a Philly. Hopefully there's some postseason success in there along the way. But when you sign a guy to a 13-year deal, you're kind of paying some on the back end for intentions of him being good on the front end, are you not? And not only him being good on the front end, but the team being good on the front end. I mean, so in terms of what the team has done, do you think Bryce Harper not was sold a bag of goods, but how disappointed would you guess that he is as of right now? Is there any buyer's remorse in your opinion from the Bryce Harper point of things of like, hey, I'm holding up my end. I just won an MVP. We're 3 years into this thing, and the best thing we have to show for it is an 82-win season.
No, I don't think there is buyer's remorse from him. Certainly, it'd be understandable if there was, but he seems happy and content. And I think, of course, he wants to win, and hopefully in his mind that the Phillies will help him to do that. But he wanted stability, which, I mean, I've been writing about Bryce Harper since like his third year with the Nationals, saying, hey, he could become a free agent after 2018. And I think that wore on him, which is why he didn't want the opt-out. He wanted the full no-trade clause. He wanted to settle down with his family. He's been able to do all that, and I think that mattered a lot to him. He's comfortable. Like, of course, athletes should want to win, but we do lose sight of the fact that sometimes these are actual people too, and most people, especially as they get older, like stability and being comfortable in a place. And I think Bryce Harper has found that with the Phillies. So I don't think there's a ton of buyer's remorse, if any.
And then I guess last Bryce question before we transition into the entire team here, based upon the season we saw him have in the year 2021, based upon what we saw elsewhere, I mean, what is he recently, what, turned 28, if I'm not mistaken? So
29.
29. I apologize. He was 28. He just recently turned 29. So, you know, he's approaching the wrong age of 30 here. Certainly, I don't think anyone views Bryce Harper as old, but in terms of your own personal expectation, odds, not that he has another MVP season necessarily, but that he maintains, and it's ironic to call it an all-star level when he didn't even make the all-star team in the year 2021, but maintains anything close to resembling what we've seen from him. Like, what is the clock here in terms of the Phillies building a team around him? How many more years can you expect out of a guy like this?
Well, I think at this level, you can expect if you're talking about what makes us a good contract, you would have to hope that you get kind of an average of what you got this year and what you got in 2019 through like age 33, something like that. So there is not a ton of time left. And that's why it's difficult for the Phillies to try to balance. The farm system absolutely needs to get better, but also you need to sign guys because your whole team, your whole core is 30-ish right now, give or take. And you, the clock is ticking. Like, it's not the window's open. I think the window is closing with this specific core. So you have to balance that when you think about signing guys that you're going to lose draft compensation to, and that could potentially hurt you down the road. But if you don't make some of those signings now, you might waste this era.
Last question here before we go into our second break, which is, as you see it here, just other awards across baseball. We'll get back into the Phillies here in a second, but Vlad Guerrero, loses out to Shohei Ohtani in the MVP. The Cy Youngs went to Robbie Ray, as well as NL Cy Young was, I'm blanking on who it was.
Corbin Burns.
Corbin Burns. That's right. Corbin Burns beating out Zach Wheeler, number two, and Max Scherzer, number three. Any surprises there? I didn't expect Wheeler to get it. I did expect Burns to get it. I expected Robbie Ray to get it in the American League. Shohei Ohtani was unanimous MVP in the American League. A manager of the year, of course, was our old buddy, Gabe Kapler, as well as Kevin Cash down in Tampa. Any surprises with any of the awards here in the year 2021?
No, I think they got the NL Cy Young right. Zach Wheeler was excellent. And I said this the other day, if Zach Wheeler had been in the American League, I think he probably would have run away with the Cy Young if he had that exact same season, because his season was quite a bit better than Robbie Ray's, I think. But Corbin Burns, I know the innings thing is a holdup, and I understand that, but he was just so dominant. I think he deserved that award. The flip side of the Wheeler and the AL thing, though, is that if Bryce Harper is in the AL, he's certainly not finishing above Ohtani. I don't think he finishes above Vlad, and there's a case between him and Marcus Semien for third. So it's possible Bryce Harper's not even an MVP finalist if he's in the American League. So you kind of got the best and worst of that there.
It works both ways for sure. Final segment here of episode number one with Tim Kelly coming right up. But first, a word from our sponsors. Back here with Tim Kelly for the final segment of episode number one. We'll kind of transition into the state of the Philadelphia Phillies here a little bit. You see, we could get into a lot of things here. And again, we will carry this into another episode. But as you look, the Phillies finished the season 82-80. Bryce Harper, MVP season. Zach Wheeler, Cy Young finalist. And yet, despite both of those things, still not good enough. And we'll hash some more what they need to do this offseason and how the lockout's going to affect that and every different possible angle of that. But as you see it right now, the biggest reason, in your opinion, and certainly I have plenty of reasons on this, and I think these are reasons that have all been discussed at length and at nauseam, quite frankly, but the biggest reasons why the Phillies fell short in the year 2021, just kind of as a season wrap-up kind of thing.
Well, I still think it's like a bigger picture thing of not developing talent, falling behind in building your research and development and analytics and all that 10 years ago. They're still digging out of that hole. And I think they've made two good first round draft picks in the last 2 years. But not only do they need to start developing blue chip players, which they really haven't done, they haven't developed one of those since Aaron Nola. I think a year ago we thought Alec Bohm might be and Spencer Howard might be, and have a completely different opinion a year later. But they also need, like, when I hear people say they shouldn't sign Starling Marte, they should trade for Byron Buxton or whoever, Kevin Kiermaier, it's just like, after Mick Abel and Andrew Painter, there's not a ton there. You don't have your like fifth or sixth prospects that are like really appealing to teams. They might be nice players that are going to be major leaguers, but you don't have guys that you don't have organizational depth. You're top heavy at the major league level, and at the minor league level, you don't know. You have two pitchers that you're high on that are years away from the major league level, and not a ton beyond that. So I think it continues to be that you aren't developing from within your system. You have had a lot of success getting these top level guys in free agency. And I don't think that should be discounted, because you easily could have signed Madison Bumgarner instead of Zach Wheeler, and they didn't, or Steven Strasburg, and they didn't. But beyond that, like, one of the things that made the 2008 Phillies great, beyond developing a core of some of the best players in franchise history, was finding guys like Greg Dobbs and Jason Worth for pennies on the dollar. And you haven't done that to this point.
That's for sure. So when you assess, I don't want to say blame, but responsibility perhaps is a better word for the 2021 Phillies season. I think I was discussing this with Scott Lauber when I had him on a few weeks ago, as well as a number of other guests and people who I've just spoken to since the season ended. I mean, how much of it is the organization as a whole, and maybe dating back to the Klintak McPhail days, because they were in charge up until, you know, basically through last season? How much of it is Dombrowski, who took over kind of midway through the offseason last year? How much of it is organizational struggles that go back further? How much of it is Girardi? How much of it is just the players on the field not living up to their expectations? Like, as you assess reasons why this didn't happen, or the organizational shortcomings, like, where does the focus go for you?
I think it goes back like 10 years in terms of not
go back to Ruben Amaro. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, not developing and I mean, that was way bigger than just Ruben Amaro. It's holding on to players, not developing from within, not embracing analytics. And yeah, that's a pejorative and it's a buzzword, whatever. Other teams that got ahead of the curve are reaping the benefits now, and the Phillies are not beefing up your ability to find international talent. It's a lot, and it adds up, because a lot of the good players that are on this team right now, Aaron Nola, Rhys Hoskins, were from that Amaro era, late in the Amaro era when they drafted. So you give credit in that sense, but then there's not a ton of depth. You had a Cole Hamels trade where you got absolutely nothing out of it at this point. And then the Matt Klentak, Andy McPhail, I think Matt Klentak's a very nice guy and probably got something of a raw deal, but you just don't have much to show for that era at all. You know, Mickey Moniak seems like he's a fourth outfielder, probably. Adam Haseley, I'm not sure, is going to be a major leaguer, period. Like, Cornelius Randolph, which goes back to the Amaro era, is not even in the organization anymore. Spencer Howard didn't pan out. So you have problems finding the talent, and then once you get the talent into your organization, you've had problems nurturing it, both in the minor league system and when you inevitably hit a wall, either at AAA or at the major league level.
And then final question here in episode one, and we will discuss this more in episode two as we transition to the current offseason. How much do you put on just kind of an isolation on Dombrowski not addressing the rotation more going into the year, signing Chase Anderson and Matt Moore? Was there anything you would have liked to see him do differently? Trade deadline, you know, how much can you put any amount of responsibility on Dave Dombrowski before, as we head into this next offseason?
Well, obviously, Chase Anderson and Matt Moore signings did not work out. The Phillies, you they didn't have their front office in place until way after you need to have your front office in place to build a good strategy. And so much of the offseason became about JT Realmuto and Didi Gregorius. And yeah, I mean, I don't envy the job that Dombrowski had to do. I know Sam Fold was in the organization, but in a different capacity. It's hard for me to judge them too much on that. And we're going to see, based on the jury is still going to be out on what happens with the Kyle Gibson trade as well moving forward. But this offseason, for sure, you get a full offseason and you go from there. Because I'm pretty sure at this point last year, I don't believe Dave Dombrowski was hired. Like, he was in Nashville thinking he was helping to build an expansion team or bring an expansion team there. So think about all the different things that have already happened this MLB offseason, all the different rumors and buzz about what will happen in the coming weeks. And then remember that at this time last year, Ned Rice was kind of overseeing that. And at this stage, Ned Rice is still in the front office, but I don't know that he's like one of the key decision makers in terms of what you're doing in free agency trades, etc.
More Locked On Phillies episode 2 with Tim Kelly here on Locked On Phillies coming right up. But first, I have to tell you about Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling.